we've got with us Connor Boyack. Connor, are you with us?
I am, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing well. What did you want to talk about today? Boston?
As well as one can be doing on Monday, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Boston. You know, it's been all the rage. Not a whole lot can be said, perhaps, than has already been said by so many talking heads. But I wanted to discuss a particular angle that I find worrisome, and that is the lingering effects of Boston, right? You've been talking about it a little bit on your show today, the precedent that's being set, the patterns that are being established.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Napolitano has been doing a good job at raising the war cry with that. I was interviewed a couple days ago for a City Weekly article that they did, and I was grateful that they did this article about the Salt Lake Marathon, which just got done, and the frenzy that a lot of people were being whipped into because they thought, well, Boston Marathon, Salt Lake City Marathon. Oh, well, you know, there's a potential threat to a Salt Lake City Marathon merely because this bombing happened at a Boston Marathon. And so the police, according to the reporter, were being inundated with phone calls from media and people that were worried about the security at the Salt Lake Marathon because what if it happened there? And there's no credible threats. There was no worry by police of anything actually happening. And yet, to quell the fear that so many people had, the police started trumping up their "if you see something, say something" campaign. Right? This is something that Big Sis Janet Napolitano got started recently at the federal level, really getting people to turn on their neighbors, suspect their neighbors, turn them in, take photos, call the cops, and be on the lookout. You know, which of course, you know, a certain amount of vigilance is a great thing, and yet turning us against each other and the suspicion of terrorism happening in our own neighborhoods is pretty unwarranted. And that's kind of what I want to talk about, is that these things are so unlikely. You know, you see a Boston event, and it's tragic. I mean, people die. People are injured. We don't want that at all. We oppose that. It's horrendous. And yet it has to be contextualized, and we don't get that from the media, because every news station has people on the ground and people are tweeting about it, and there's just this massive frenzy. You know, this manhunt happens, and it's a 19-year-old kid who causes triggers, and it locked down of an entire city and soft martial law throughout suburbs of Boston. We lose context so quickly about what this is that, yes, it was tragic, but On a percentage basis, when you look statistically at the likelihood of this ever happening to you or I or anyone else, it is extremely insignificant. In fact, far more insignificant and unlikely, I should say, than much more mundane things. There was a funny article that came out recently by The Atlantic that the headline was their attention grabber, but they linked to an article that actually provides the substance backing up the claim that Americans are as likely to be killed by their own furniture as by terrorism.
This is the thing that I've been trying to wake people up to on this show. It's like the media vilifies and gets, it's like dogs. All of a sudden, pit bulls are the bad dog, and you know, it was like Rottweilers before that and Dobermans. But the statistics don't actually feed it. It's just total nonsense and hoopla.
Yep.
I mean, I rail about doctors. Doctors. And when you combine doctors, death by doctor, iatrogenic death, mm-hmm. and adverse drug reactions, it's like over 300,000 Americans every single year.
Yep.
And yet nobody's talking about that.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't strike that same emotional chord. We think inherently that doctors are there to serve us and help us and make us better, and yet terrorists are inherently evil, and, you know, as soon as someone is branded a terrorist by the government and here's our suspect, that they represent the embodiment of evil, and it trumps up those fears that politicians, and in fact, I had to laugh after the 2004 Republican National Convention. There's a funny clip that you can go search on YouTube. Just search for, you know, 2004 GOP convention and then the word fear. And it's a clip that they extracted from all the different speakers.
Oh,
of course,
yeah.
This was the first convention right after 9/11. And the number of times they mentioned and weapons of mass destruction and terrorists and cold-blooded murder and all of these fear things. It was amazing how much it's saturated.
No, you'd actually had me for one of your segments play that clip before.
Yeah, I remember. We actually did do that. And it's very easy to find, but I think it strikes a very educational tone to look at that when it's compiled. Of course, if you watched over the entire, you know, however many hours it was, maybe that won't come across as much. But when you kind of see how much this is being inundated. The City Weekly article I mentioned, there was a professor from University of Utah, a law professor quoted. He's the co-director of this Center for Global Justice. He teaches classes on terrorism, even runs terrorist attack simulations for his class. And he's saying, oh, this is perfectly acceptable. In fact, he says in the article that law enforcement, referring to the Salt Lake City Marathon, which there was no credible threat, there was no concern at all among law enforcement, but he says, law enforcement will feel the need to provide enhanced security to quell public concern. Now, interesting, it's not to keep people safe. It's not to protect them from any credible threat or any likelihood that they were going to be attacked by a bomb, but that law enforcement, according to this professor, will feel the need to provide enhanced security to quell public concern, to abate people's fears. Not that something's going to happen, but they want to see men with guns and uniforms to feel safer, not necessarily to be safer.
Well,
of course,
I think that sounds good in theory. I think you're onto something. I think people think that, and then like I played this clip of this woman who's actually there, and she's a Bostonian, and she saw people being ripped from their houses during these house to house searches. She was in sheer terror of these people with guns, whether they're police or terrorists, in sheer terror.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a valid point. In fact, it's been interesting to see that angle of the warrantless searches that have been happening, and I think that's part of the conditioning that this professor is talking about, that people want their fears abated by seeing police, is that it's a conditional thing. It's an emotional thing. It's not that there's any actual threat. It's not that these police officers are necessarily responding to any legitimate tips, to any likelihood of a bomb happening here in Salt Lake City or any attack against you and I. It's emotionalism.
Yes.
And I think that's extremely problematic when we go back and talk, as you've been doing, about the precedent that people are in many cases begging for more police protection. They're begging for a police state merely because they want to feel secure. With the TSA, right, it's called security theater. It's the pretense of security without actual need for that security to be there. There's no credible threat. There's no particularity that any one person has any contraband on them. We're just going to search everyone. It's the security theater. It's to give people the pretense that we are secure, make them feel secure. But to what extent do we surrender our liberties and codify and create all these big government programs and spend so much in taxpayer dollars merely because we want to feel secure? And then you go and actually talk about the efficacy of all that money.
Yeah, I think
I wasn't even found by a cop.
These are very important points. Go deeper into it, guys. Got Connor Boyack with us on the line. 801-254-5855 is the call-in number. Come on back.
Jack and I painted a picture of my life and my dreams. Suddenly it's crazy.
My dad's Mercedes E-Class has 26,000 miles on it, but I'm taking it to a billion zillion.
Of all the things you hand down to your children, very few will be of the quality of a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz. Because a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz is 100% through and through a Mercedes-Benz. And right now, during our certified pre-owned sales event, you can get exceptional 1.99% financing on select models. Every one of our certified pre-owned vehicles undergoes a rigorous inspection by factory-trained technicians to ensure it meets the uncompromising standards of Mercedes-Benz. And considering we invented the automobile, those standards are indeed high. Plus, a warranty and roadside assistance for up to 5 years and 100,000 total miles. And now, with 3 months of Sirius satellite radio.
Thanks in advance, Dad.
Hurry into the Mercedes-Benz certified pre-owned sales event now through October 1st. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, it's not certified pre-owned.
See dealer or call 1-800-4-MERCEDES for complete program, including certified pre-owned, limited warranty, and Sirius satellite radio details and limitations. Not all customers are qualified for advertised APR and are subject to prior credit approval.
She knows a hollow from a double up. She does snapbacks, backsides, shoots the curl. Bethany Hamilton knows everything about surfing. She just didn't know about the shark. But just months after the attack, and with only one arm, the 13-year-old surfs again. And now she's ripping it better than ever. So next time life puts a little fear in you, just think of Bethany Hamilton hanging 10 on top of a heavy wave. That's real courage. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
What if you lost your job tomorrow? Or if a flood, hurricane, or earthquake, or you lost power for weeks? Would you be able to feed your family? If you had stocked up storable foods from GoFoods, you would have been prepared. For decades, the GoFoods team has helped thousands of families just like yours become more secure and confident with their greatest dependency, food. At less than $2 per entree meal, yes, $2, GoFoods offers delicious, quick, and easy meals that can be enjoyed tonight or stored for up to 25 years. Now imagine your peace of mind having a convenient and nutritious just add water and simmer food reserve on hand if an emergency or personal hardship strikes. We're so confident that you'll love our food, we'll send you 12 delicious meals and 3 beverages for free just to prove it. And all you pay is a small fee for shipping and handling. Call 1-800-721-1033. That's 1-800-721-1033 for your free samples now. Or go to k-talk.com and click on the Go Foods banner ad.
All right, guys, we are back. Jake Shannon Radio Show. That's me, Jake Shannon, joined on the line with Connor Boyack. We're doing the Boyack Review as we do every Monday at 2:30. Connor, you still there?
I am indeed.
So what I'm noticing develop right now is kind of a narrative that's very interesting. I'm seeing people like, for example, Michael Bloomberg just said, and this is on Politiker.com, Bloomberg says interpretation of Constitution will, quote, have to change after Boston bombing. So it's not these individuals, these idiots who perpetrated it, not potentially the FBI who set it up and created the whole scenario in the first place, but it's the Constitution that's being vilified here. I mean, how stupid is that?
Well, and I have to laugh, especially even here at the Utah legislature. You see those who are the statists all the time. They'll kind of concede your point or express, you know, some sort of agreement, and then they throw a but in there and completely reject your point, right? I remember notably Jim DeBacchus. He's the state Democratic Party chairman and a state senator, and he says, well, I strongly support the Second Amendment, but we can't have war bullets on the street, whatever war bullets are. And he starts going off on all these, you know, anti-Second Amendment things. And in this article that you mentioned, I was just looking at it too, Bloomberg says, the people who are worried about privacy have a legitimate worry. Oh, okay, well, that sounds great. And then he continues, but we live in a complex world where you're going to have a level of security greater than you did back in the olden days, if you will. And
it's like in the South when they totally insult you and then say, bless your heart.
Right.
It's like, are you kidding me?
You know, and it's just, it's worrisome when you get into stuff like this, because this isn't just policy. It's not a tax that's 10 cents. You know, it's not these more benign laws. This is boots on the ground, guns in your face, very real policies that get people killed. We published this morning at the Libertas Institute website an interview with Eric Hill, which many of your listeners are familiar with the story. Last December, Ogden police show up at his home at 2:30 in the morning, banging on the door. His daughter, scared, comes in, wakes him up, goes to the door with a bat, not knowing who it is. He doesn't think it's cops. Opens the door, and he's got, you know, 3 semi-auto rifles in his face. And they pull him outside. They bring his daughters out, put the guy in handcuffs, and it was the wrong guy. They were looking for this guy who went AWOL from the military, and it wasn't him. And had the cops done their due diligence and run the license plates on the car and, you know, done a little bit more work, it's quite likely that that event wouldn't have had to happen. That trauma, that family experience, lingering trauma today, would not have occurred. In fact, one of the police officers, we published in this interview where Eric told us that the police officer told us on the way out that, well, it's a good thing that you had a bat, because if you would have come to the door, with a gun, we would have blown you away.
Ugh.
Which many of them, up at the Weber Narcotics Strike Force did a couple years ago.
Yeah.
With an individual who opened the door with Todd Blair with a golf club, thinking he was defending himself. So, you know, these things, this interpretation of the Constitution, oh, we need to protect ourselves, that's all quaint. You know, bless their hearts.
Yeah, exactly. Let's turn the tables.
Right. But these are real policies that get people killed. And that's the worry, that when we have a police state based on emotionalism, based on wanting people to feel secure, based on security theater, people are dying as a result. You know, it's not just helping people feel good. It's that you have these police officers who have all of these assets. They have these guns. They have tanks. They have all of these things that they're trained to put them to use. And inevitably, they will. Many, you know, bless their hearts, they will show restraint. They will not, you know, wrongfully target innocent people, or they will not act based on their adrenaline and end up killing the wrong person or whatever. But in too many cases, there was a great Cato article a couple years ago, and they documented so many instances in which, based primarily on the war on drugs, militarized police officers were killing, harming, etc., completely innocent people.
Yeah, yeah. If, for people who want to see this, cato.org/raidmap, RAIDMAP.
Excellent.
Man, that is like, that is one of the scariest pieces of visual information I've ever seen, because what they do is they do exactly what you're talking about. They have this map with little, you know, the little flags that they put to mark things, and they have them color-coded. And you wouldn't believe, when you actually look, how many innocent people are either killed or just basically having their rights violated alone, but killed or injured is just astronomical.
And countrywide, it's roughly 100 times every single day, right?
Wow.
40,000 times a year, roughly. 100 times a day around the country, this type of stuff is happening.
You know, you were talking about the likelihood of this when you opened your segment, about the likelihood being so low. And I can't remember the statistic where I saw this, but it was something like the American citizen is more likely, 8 times more likely to be killed by a police officer than a terrorist.
Well, and that's actually where I want to steer the conversation, so I'm glad that you did. There's an article on 538.com. These guys do a lot of polling and very data-driven analysis. And this article is a couple years old. It was from December 2009. And it was specifically in context of airborne terrorism, right? 9/11-style hijacking an airplane. But it has particular relevance to Boston, to any other act of terrorism, which is equally infrequent. So I want to read, you know, a couple paragraphs from here, because it's got some really interesting analysis that I think gives that context that we lack when we're talking about the Salt Lake City Marathon, or, you know, going to the grocery store, the airport, or what have you. So he expands out to the past decade. This is, again, December 2009, and said that there had been 6 attempted terrorist incidents on board a commercial airline. Of course, this was including 9/11. So then he goes to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics and is able to compile all sorts of data. For example, in the past decade, when this article was written, there had been 99 million commercial airline departures. So you divide that by 6, because of these 6 attacks, 6 commercial airline flights that have been hijacked, you get 1 terrorist incident per 16.5 million departures. Okay, these departures flew 69 billion miles, so that means there had been 1 terrorist incident per 11.5 billion miles flown. Assuming an average airborne speed of 425 miles per hour, the airplanes were aloft for a total of 163 million hours, so then you can say there had been 1 terrorist incident per 27 million hours airborne. Or you can divide that and say 1 incident per 3,100 years.
You're more likely to die from eating the fish on the plane.
And that's where he's going right now, specifically with lightning. But there's all sorts of other comparisons you can make, you know, exactly as you're doing. But he brings it back to lightning, and this is how. There were a total of 674 passengers, not counting crew or the terrorists themselves, on the flights on which these incidents occurred. 674. By contrast, there have been 7 billion passenger enplanements over the past decade, right? 7 billion times an individual flew on a plane over the past decade. Therefore, the odds of being on any given departure, which is the subject of a terrorist incident, have been 1 in 10.5 million over the past decade. By contrast, so again, 1 in 10.5 million for airplane terrorism. By contrast, the odds of being struck by lightning in a given year are about 1 in 500,000. That means you could board flights, 20 flights per year, and still be less likely to be the subject of an attempted terrorist attack than to be struck by lightning.
Unbelievable. Right? And what happens when, like, we latch onto this irrational fear, which is the point that you're making. It's completely irrational and unfounded, and yet now we have a Department of Homeland Security with some mm-hmm. god-awful budget that our grandchildren will be paying off.
Mm-hmm.
This has real – what you're talking about has real ramifications in our everyday life, not only from the money and the way we've enslaved our grandkids, but by the fact we're putting guns in a lot of the hands that aren't citizens and aren't subject to the same kind of scrutiny as we as citizens are.
Yeah, and not only that, but now, I mean, you had military boots on the ground in Boston, right? Posse comitatus is out the window, wherein military was prohibited from doing any type of law enforcement activity on the streets. And now it's commonplace. They work in synergy with one another, so many of these articles would say that.
And the irony that it's, of course, the home of the Boston Tea Party.
Right, right. And the point that I next wanted to make, so we talked a little bit about the data, right? These terrorist examples, extremely infrequent. Actually, the point that I made real quick in the City Weekly article is that 9/11 happens, and now we have the TSA, and we have the Patriot Act, right? We have all these different things that have come as a result. The underwear bomber happens, and so then the TSA starts putting their hands in our pants when you go to the airport, right? It's a very backwards, reactive, completely insane policy that has no basis in being proactive and forward-thinking, because what terrorists would try and do the same thing again, you know, once they've effectively been successful and got us to be all fearful and stuff. But what I want to next drive to is a very interesting article on The Atlantic. This is actually a few years old. It was November 2007 by David Foster Wallace. And it made the rounds a little bit after the Boston event, because its point is valid. Anytime one of these quote-unquote terrorist things happens, we still don't know if this guy was a patsy or a legitimate terrorist or whatever. And by patsy, of course, you've played this clip before. Judge Napolitano and others have pointed out, Glenn Greenwald foremost among them, that the FBI regularly concocts its own terrorist operation.
Right.
And they fund the patsy, they give them all the plans, they give them everything, and at the last minute they swoop in and save the day.
This, well, of course, they wouldn't happen if the FBI weren't doing this. They probably would never happen.
Right. That's exactly right. And so I say alleged terrorist because who knows who this guy is. But anytime there's one of these events, this article is fascinating to ponder. I want to read two paragraphs because I think this has some excellent lessons to take home from any type of attack, legitimate or contrived or whatever. So again, this is November 2007. You can search for it on theatlantic.com. The title is Just Asking. And he says, are some things still worth dying for? Is the American idea one such thing? What if we chose to regard the 2,973 innocents killed in the atrocities of 9/11 not as victims, but as democratic martyrs or sacrifices on the altar of freedom? In other words, what if we decided that a certain baseline vulnerability to terrorism is part of the price of the American idea, and thus that ours is a generation of Americans called to make great sacrifices in order to preserve our democratic way of life? I disagree with democratic, but you get his idea. He continues, sacrifices not just of our soldiers and money, but also of our personal safety and comfort. In other words, what if we chose to accept the fact that every few years, despite all reasonable precautions, some hundreds or even thousands of us may die in the sort of ghastly terrorist attack that a democratic republic cannot 100% protect itself from without subverting the very principles that make it worth protecting. He gives an example. Would it be monstrous to refer to the 40,000-plus domestic highway deaths we accept each year because the mobility and autonomy of the car are evidently worth that high price?
Right.
Right. And just as one example, there are many others, but it's a fascinating thought experiment, right? Because we've done the complete opposite in this nation. We've taken the highly unfortunate deaths of a very limited few people and turned it into fuel for public policy that has completely shifted the American political paradigm. We now openly embrace a police state.
Yeah.
We now openly embrace having an NSA in our backyard, and we applaud it, such as the Jason Chaffetzes and the Governor Herberts, because of its job creation. Seriously? Right? Is that the basis of our public policy now? We've completely warped what it means to be an American, what it means to be a free-thinking, independent individual who supports liberty. There are very few anymore when you see how openly people clamor for the very things that so many of the founding fathers, those in that generation, tried to warn us against and tried to set up a system to help prevent these things from happening, because they had seen similar things, especially in Boston, back in their own day. And so this article, I think, is fascinating, because what if we reacted a completely different way? What if we accepted these things as very unfortunate events? And, of course, when you think that so many of these terrorists do what they do as blowback, as retaliation for us being over there, if we refuse to go over there, if we refuse to occupy their countries and have this foreign policy based on retaliation for for these terrorist acts, how different things would be today. Would the Bostons be happening? Would these future attacks even be happening at all? And even if and when they did, what if we chose to react? What if we, as a largely Christian nation, decided to turn the other cheek? You know, I think back of the Ron Paul debate in South Carolina. If, what if we forgave? What if we turned the other cheek? It's hard to fathom.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Very, very sobering thoughts when you look at the facts and not just the knee-jerk reaction. Appreciate the segment.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Guys, check them out over at libertasutah.org. We'll be back tomorrow.